Welcome to Comics,
episode 238. This week, we talk about
Batgirl, Silent Running.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast.
Barda has a house. You think, like, her name's on the paperwork. Is her legal first name Big?
No, her first name's Barda. She's Barda free.
Okay. So Big is just an epithet there.
Yes. Yeah.
It's her job title.
My job is Big. So have you guys gone on and looked at the pictures that I posted for the competition?
Yes.
Not at all.
You haven't? Oh, David, you need to go on and throw some likes on this stuff.
No, I'm kidding. I did.
Okay. I'm surprised we've got a really good response. We've already got, like, clear leaders and a clear loser. Sorry. Let's see. The purple Sengoku Astray has 14. The Banshee Norn with LEDs and the Zaku Amazing both have 12. The Weathered Denial Gundam has 13. And the Christmas Sengoku has 5.
Aww.
But the good news is if you're listening to this and you haven't gone and checked it out, straight up, your likes will influence who wins, and the winner is going to get a prize. I'm going to buy an SD kit and send it to the winner. So it ain't just for shigs. Like, go in, drop a like, and we'll let you know whose was whose. Probably, I think next week at the end of this Batgirl arc, we'll leave it up for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it'll be fun stuff, man. I had a lot of fun building mine, and I'm glad that we're getting a decent response. It's cool.
Yep.
Yeah, they were really I'm about to embark on my second one.
Nice. Yeah, I posted it on r/Gunpla on Reddit, and they were like, this was not beginners. And I'd be like, yeah, most of them were, actually.
Really?
Like, beginner level.
Oh, that's
really?
Cool.
I didn't even notice that thread. I'm going to have to look it up later.
Yeah, it only had 5 upvotes.
Eh.
Actually, no, I think it had 6. That's not too bad for our Gunpla. It's not a huge form.
And Gunpla's not, it's not like a super active subreddit. I mean, it is. I like, it's one of the few that I subscribe, well, not a few. I subscribe to a lot, but it's one that I check regularly. But somehow I missed this one.
Because people post a lot of cool pictures of their stuff in there.
Did you post it under your personal?
Yeah.
Okay.
u/JollyAndy.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you know what's up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really cool. And then the other pictures on Facebook were pictures of David in his fucking Mandalorian armor. What the hell, man? Out of nowhere.
Well, so shout out to my buddy Jason. I don't think he listens to the podcast, but anyways.
Not yet.
He kept prodding me to get on it, and I really wanted to, and I don't know why I was slacking, but he was like, okay, we're going to have an armor party, so come down. And so one afternoon a couple of weeks ago, actually probably like 3 weeks ago, I took my big sheet of Sintra, which is a material that the armor is made out of, drew up the stencils and then cut out the pieces. And then the following Sunday, I went back again to this, one of the members of the Mandalorian Mercs that's local to me, who's having the armor party. He had a small one, and then he had a big one for the whole, like, local Northern California clan. And so I went the following weekend as well. I spent like 3 hours sanding.
Damn.
And then, nice. Once I was done sanding, they started shaping my armor on my person. So, it's not quite, done. I have to gotta do the cod piece still to have that part shaped.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
You need that.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody's
necessary for membership.
Everyone's is different. It's not actually.
Oh, really? It's not one of the necessary parts? Oh, yeah, because Sabine, they change a bunch of stuff when she...
Well, you can do a loincloth also.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But you have to have something over your crotch area.
Go tribal.
So, you know, so far I just have my armor shaped. I'm waiting for my helmet to come and in planning on the colors and stuff. But I'm hoping probably in the next 3 months or so to have my kit done.
I'd be fucking sick.
That's my plan, at least. I want to start doing events and stuff next year. What I plan to do is my kit's going to be kind of basic. So, like, Boba Fett's armor. So, if you look at Boba Fett in the Star Wars movies, he has a lot less armor than Jango.
Yeah.
And so mine's going to be a Boba-style kit initially, and then as time goes on, I might add to it.
What colors are you doing?
I'm not 100% sure. I have this, like, I don't know. I keep going back and forth.
Are you going to go with what you think looks cool, or are you going to go with, like, the Mandalorian? Because all the colors mean something.
I was going to go with what I think looks cool.
Okay, yeah. Because I thought about that, too, and then you get too bogged down with what they mean, and but then you don't like the colors, but the meaning is good, and I don't know. I think going with the colors is the way to go.
So what I was thinking I wanted to do, so in the Mandalorian mercs, they have something called brigades. And what those are is you kind of give you pick like a job kind of for your character. Because you make a character, you're supposed to come up with your own Mandalorian name and everything. And I wanted to do originally I was going to do like a sniper type of role. And so I was going to do like earthy camouflage type colors. So I have a couple designs using those kind of colors. But then I also came up with this one where the primary color is like a dark gray with, and then have black, red, and like a gold color as like secondary colors. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of like that one a lot. So we'll see what I end up doing. I don't want to start painting until I have my helmet because, most of the feedback and stuff I've received from, current official Mandalorian Mercs members is that you should start with your helmet.
Yeah, because that's a good canvas to figure out what colors look good together, kind of how you want to set up, which we want to be the accent.
Yeah. I mean, they have these things on, they have this, somebody made this app on the Mandalorian Mercs website called the Mando Maker. And it's like it's like a paper doll type thing where you can add colors and armors and things to a Mandalorian and kind of fill it in, but it's kind of limited. Mm-hmm. So what I need to do is get like a coloring book and just color pictures of Boba Fett.
That's actually the legit idea. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, it's something that I had, I'd seen other people, other members of the Mercs do. But, the people who are local to me, so Northern California is the Terran clan. That's what I forget what Terran means in Mandalorian. But,
not Terran as in like earthen, but isn't it T-E-R-E-N?
Right. Yeah. And so because it's such a big area, the groups are not officially split, but because people kind of, to do local stuff, everybody kind of congregates. So the South Bay group, like people around, you know, San Jose area up into Fremont, they're all an awesome group of people. They, you know, they encourage you to join them for armor parties so everybody can help each other do stuff. And it's really cool.
Next time you hear about an armor party, let me know. Because yeah. I also am super interested. I just need to get off my ass.
I mean, that's what I did. I just needed somebody... Fortunately, Jason, prodded me enough to get going, and it felt really good to just get the armor, the pieces cut out and not even shaped. It just felt like a huge step in progress. And now I have like this box in my garage; it's full of the armor, which is really awesome. And yeah. So I'm gonna start buying the soft parts, so like the flight suit and things like that, pretty soon. So, I'll keep. Maybe I'll start sharing pictures of my progress on our podcast.
On our Facebook? That'd be sick. Yeah, you should totally do that.
I'll post the pictures I have so far along with the, like, designs, kind of color schemes I've come up with. And, you know, listeners, if you have feedback or think, you know, you think you have like a cool idea, I mean, feel free to share it with me. I'm open to lots of different things. So yeah, that's kind of, you know, that's what I've been working on lately. I'm pretty excited about it because it's Star Wars costuming is something I've wanted to do for a long time. And, you know, the mercs, Mandalorian mercs are cool. I like it because, there's a lot of creativity there's a lot of leeway for creativity, unlike the 501st or something where you have to do like canon costumes, which is fine. You know, those guys put in a lot of work to get their costumes up to snuff, but, you know, it's just something else.
And I know there's a lot of crossover between the two groups, but I don't know. In my experience talking with people, it seems like the Mando people are generally more laid back.
Yeah, I think there's the rules for like the 501st and the Rebel Legion.
Yeah, it's strict screen replica. It's very strict. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's actually one guy in local to us who has one costume that is allowed for all three costuming clubs.
Oh. Wow. Which costume is that?
He has a Obi-Wan, so in Star Wars, The Clone Wars, there's a series where Obi-Wan goes to Mandalore. And he wears a Death Watch costume. So he has an Obi-Wan Death Watch canon one. So
nice.
The costume fits into the Mandalorian mercs because it's
Mando, Death Watch. Obviously.
It fits into the 501st because it's a Death Watch thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he even has, so he even has has his hair cut and he has a beard similar to Obi-Wan in the Clone Wars. So if he takes the helmet off, Then he's Rebel Legion. He has a blue lightsaber too that goes with it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That is so cool.
Yeah. So
that's great. Just make one kit, make it beautiful, and make it count.
I think he has more than one kit though. He's one of the like long time.
That's what they say though. You know, you're never gonna have just one kit.
Well, his Mandalorian name is Cyper, who's like he's the what's equivalent of like the sergeant at arms for Northern California. So he's responsible for making sure everybody's armor is
up to snuff.
Up to snuff. He's the guy who throws the armor parties in Fremont. But
yeah, he was cool.
Yeah, he loves making armor. So he has his Mando kit. I remember him telling me he was working on a Boba Fett costume. He's also planning out a Captain Rex costume. And his kids he has three kids and they all have armor. And his wife is going to have armor as well. So.
Oh, that's baller as hell.
Yeah. But anyways, I could sit here and talk about this forever. If you find any of this interesting and you'd like to maybe do some Star Wars costuming, I mean, the Mandalorian Mercs and 501st Rebel Legion, all those groups are charity organizations first and foremost. And all the work they do is to raise money for different charities. So, you know, if you build your armor and you want to just look awesome and wear it all the time and do something good, you know, it's a good way to do it. And the Rebel, the Mercs, I like because, you know, there's different levels of armor and you get to put your own personality into it. And
you can make your own headcanon. You can make your own character, which is so cool.
That's what you're supposed to do. Yeah. Your character is supposed to have its own name and stuff. So.
Yeah, but that's so cool because you can't do that in the other groups. And
right.
It's awesome to be the stormtrooper, but sometimes you want to put yourself in there. And you can, like, think of a headcanon for your particular trooper, but at the end of the day, you're still, you know, stupid TK-421.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, sick. There you go.
Sick. Did you want to talk about One Punch Man, or?
Yeah, I talked about the Mando mercs a lot more than I had thought I was. But if you guys...
It's sick as hell.
Dude, did you watch it, Andy?
No, not yet. I want to finish Gundam Build Fighters first.
Man, so this anime started a few weeks ago. There's a manga too. It's called One Punch Man. Jen, have you watched One Punch Man?
I know of it, but I have not yet watched it.
Oh my god, it's so funny. Like, I don't often laugh out loud when I'm watching things, and this makes me laugh out loud. Like, my wife came into the room. I was like, what are you laughing at? And then she, and it's about this guy who became a super, so in the world, there's heroes. like people do this as a job. And this guy, Saitama, he's a superhero for fun. And his problem is that he's like overwhelmingly powerful. The reason that his One Punch Man is not actually his superhero name. That's just the name of the show. He just goes by Saitama, but he can defeat bad guys in one punch. And so he's really like bored with being a superhero. And it's just about, that's what the show's about. I mean, it's hard to describe it, but what's great about it is that the animation is like really, really top notch, and it looks super serious and stuff. It's like, it's animated in the way that a more serious fighting anime that's really violent would be. And this is very violent, but it's so, yes. It's so funny.
I did watch the fight scene that you sent to me, and you're right. Like, the animation quality is super good. But it kind of fools you and makes you think that it might be serious, but it's not.
Is it the one where he was fighting the ninja?
No, it's the one where he's fighting the guy who goes full carnage mode or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Looks like a beetle of some kind.
There's one where he fights this ninja, and the ninja's like trying to, the ninja is also a hero, and he's trying to like, the ninja's trying to, he thinks that Saitama's a bad guy, and Saitama accidentally punches him in the nutsack, and, it's so funny.
Okay. Yeah. No. This is on my receptor gun.
You know how, like in anime, when guys like power up, like in One Piece, for example, Luffy will power up and say like, "Gum Gum Gatling Cannon thing."
Yeah, you have to shout the move you're gonna do.
So Saitama does that in one episode, but he shouts consecutive normal punches.
Nice.
But because he's so powerful, he kills the guy he's fighting. The guy like literally explodes from getting these consecutive normal punches. So, One Punch Man, it's really funny. There's like four episodes out so far. Seriously, go watch it. It's really good.
How long are they? Are they half an hour, hour?
Yeah, they're just half hour episodes.
Oh shit, that'll be fast,
dude.
Okay.
It's so funny. I mean,
okay, I'll watch that. I'll watch that next week then. I'll be done with Gundam Build Fighters this week. I'm at the point where they're past the qualifying stuff and they're like they're in the final 16 where there's a bracket. And I think cool. I just watched Meijin Kawaguchi versus the two brothers. And these fights are sick. If you didn't keep watching Gundam Build Fighters, I highly encourage you to finish because the fighting gets really awesome. Anyway, you guys ready to talk about this week's comic?
Yeah.
This week's comic.
All right. This week we read Batgirl Silent Running by Kelly Puckett. Collected issues 1-6. It has art by Scott Peterson. And these individual issues were originally published in the year 2000. Which at first when I opened this, I was like, oh man, this art is so 90s. And I was surprised that it wasn't technically 90s. But I'm pretty sure the 2000s in terms of comics is still pretty much the 90s. Yeah, I opened this and I don't know if I was expecting too much or what, but I constantly found myself somewhat disappointed. And then after I got over the disappointment, continually surprised at the things that I did find interesting.
Oh, I had a very similar experience. I actually warmed up to it. It took me about 3 issues to get into it. I found the art very off-putting at first. Yeah. And not just the style, but I feel like the artist took a while to get into the swing of just like pacing things so you could understand what was happening, especially because there was almost no dialogue at first.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I just like issue one, I spent a lot of time having to go through the panels repeatedly to figure out the sequence of events. It didn't flow for me.
Right, especially in the action scenes, right?
Yeah.
It feels like there was just a lot of really hard cuts.
I will say, though, that I had a much easier time as I went in, and I think the artist, like, figured out how to pace the action better, more than me, like, figuring out how to read it better.
Yeah, by the time Cassandra storms the prison, it's much better than it was in the first issue. Right? Yeah. And I feel like that's when it really kind of fell into place, was when she was storming the prison.
Yeah. There's actually a few, like, really good panels, I think, at that point, like, where she does, I don't know, generally, like, creepy Batman kind of things, like, looming over people and such, but I don't know, I ended up liking probably issues 4 and 5 a lot more than any of the others, and the rest was kind of meh to me.
See, you know what I think? The plots and the stories aren't necessarily the best, and a lot of the character interactions are a little wonky. I feel like there's one good character, maybe two good characters in this comic, but they are golden. I think the character design for Cassandra Cain is amazing. And every time Cassandra is on the page being Cassandra, there's a certain energy around her. And she is fun to read. And likewise, when Batman goes to wherever he goes to talk to David Kane is super interesting too. I feel like Kelly Puckett, I feel like he has a really good sense of this character. Like Cassandra is his girl and he's going to make her awesome. And he does. But I kind of feel like it's at the expense of everybody else because Batman kind of comes across as an idiot.
Yeah, I'm glad David Kane calls him out on that.
Yeah.
He's like, world's greatest detective, right.
Yeah. And, like, continually he's an idiot. Like, with the film and, like, oh, yeah, that's, like, Alfred says, maybe it was doctored. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're right.
See, I thought he was, at first I thought, is he being sassy towards
is Batman being Alfred? A sassy dick?
Or being sarcastic. And then I went, no, he's just being stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. There's too many times where Batman just seemed like he was out of it.
Yeah, he wasn't, he was surprisingly, like, not tech savvy, which really threw me off. Like, with the film thing, he's like, you can do that? And it's like, Batman, you should know this.
This is the year 2000, bro. This is not like the 80s.
Like, well, he's maybe always up to date, right? Like, that's his job.
Well, remember that? You remember in the Batgirl Year One comic, Barbara was really impressed by his supercomputer?
Yeah.
Maybe he just hasn't upgraded. And so but his computer can't do that.
The Year One was supposed to be, like, what, 10 years before this?
Well, and also it's pretty funny that Alfred is like, you know, Tim can do this kind of thing. And Batman's like, oh, blah, blah, blah.
So in that instance, Batman was, oh, then it's just like kids being better at technology than old people. And it's that weird, like, backhanded calling Batman old.
I don't know. I don't believe in that.
But Batman can't age.
Yeah, Batman, he's forever, like diamonds.
Batman cannot age until Terry McGinnis is born. Is it McGinnis or Guinness?
McGinnis.
Cannot age until Terry McGinnis is born. Because Terry is awesome. I love Terry. And he's worthy to inherit the mantle. But until then, Batman cannot age. It just can't happen. Yeah, I don't know. But see, even in scenes where Batman's like that and Batman goes to Cassandra, Cassandra helps Batman be, I don't know, not smarter, but a more interesting presence on the page. Like, there's the action when Batman's, like, lecturing her, and he's like, but you can't understand a word I'm saying, can you? And she just goes, no. And then there's a panel where they're just staring at each other. Like, that's perfect. I love that, because that is a scene that you get over and over with Batman. Whenever there's a new person, a new crime fighter, a new member of the Bat family, somebody in Gotham, Batman has the talk with them. And I don't mean the birds and the bees, we don't kill people here and you follow my rules. Like, he has that talk with people, but he literally cannot have it with Cassandra. He can't, he can't, like, scorn her. Like, he can't anything. Just be like, I don't understand what you're saying. I'm going to go punch somebody. That's how I talk. Punch.
Well, you know, I didn't get what Batman's big issue was with the fact that at one point in her life, Cassandra was groomed to be an assassin and she had assassinated someone.
Yeah.
It's like that's, you're rescuing her from that life, Batman. That's kind of what you're doing with this. So what's the, why are you, was he going to do, kick her out of the Bat family or something?
Maybe it's because she was too young. That's what I thought.
It's even less of her fault.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with her.
So, you know how Batman is usually just a plain old normal psychopath? He was a really illogical psychopath in this one. Like, I think what you guys are just talking about also ties into the scene where she lets the guy die. She doesn't let him die. She just can't stop his death. And Batman's like, you failed.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't enough. And then Barbara is like, don't you fucking tell her that. And he does anyway. Like, and he basically says, like, even when success is impossible, you must succeed. And I understand, like, I guess he's trying to give a pep talk, but he just comes off as, like, really crazy there.
He comes off as... he comes off as illogical and dense. I don't know. I feel like part of what makes Batman an interesting character is that Batman understands that there is this gray area between good and bad. And, like, if any hero can understand the idea of Killing Joke and Batman and Joker being similar, being one day apart, like, I feel like this kind of hardline stance is something you would get from somebody like a Superman, right? But Batman understands shit happens. Sometimes people die. My parents died. Like, this seemed out of character for him to just be like, even when bad people have to die, you can't let them die. Or I don't know. No, it wasn't bad guy. It was the guy with the letter.
Yeah, hostage. Or he wasn't hostage, like prisoner dude.
Yeah, the hostage. He was taken hostage in the prison. For defending the woman in the alleyway.
Yeah, he was the Good Samaritan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what makes this striking, too, is last week we saw Batman kind of deliver the same speech, except it was in the context of the first time he tests Barbara Gordon as Batgirl. He, in their, like, simulated training ring, sees her push a carriage of explosives toward, the enemies.
Yeah.
And he's like, we don't kill people. And that makes sense, because she took an action that would have resulted in someone's death if they had been real people. Mm-hmm. But in this case, you know, Cassandra did all she could. She actually legitimately tried. And, like, she felt sad, right? Like, guilty about it.
She felt a lot of remorse, I think, that she couldn't save him.
Yeah. So. She fucking kicked through a wall to try and save this guy when they got caught. Like, Yeah, there's nothing more she could have done. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there, Jen, with the taking an action versus not being able to prevent an action. I mean, there's nothing, she could do nothing here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you guys think of Oracle in this?
So
she was there.
I don't think she... I like Oracle and I like Barbara Gordon as a character, but I don't think she did anything particularly noteworthy in this comic. I mean, mm-hmm. She was like Cassandra's roommate. I mean, literally she was, but what I mean is, like, she didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was more like girlfriend, you know? Like, she wasn't Oracle. She's like her best bitch, but that's not helpful.
What's funny is the slang you're using is fitting for the era of this comic.
I know.
15 years ago.
It's
you're being retro ghetto hip. Like
very, very, very 90s. Especially, I don't know everything about it, but... Yes, I watched TV in the 90s. This is where I learned to speak. It's just Barbara was a confidant, but wasn't Oracle. I mean, the one point where she got to be Oracle, I think Cassandra handed her a tracker. And she was like, oh, the wire's loose. And that was the extent of her extreme tech knowledge.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, how come Alfred and apparently Old Man Batman are the ones figuring out whether or not the film is a fake? Why not give that to Barbara?
Oh, didn't Batman say, like, oh, don't tell Barbara?
Oh, yeah. He didn't want anybody to know that Cassandra might have killed somebody.
Which is really weird, because I feel like, what's Barbara going to do or say about that? Is she going to suddenly fear for her life?
Nobody would. I mean, especially that contrasted. Her killing somebody contrasted perfectly with the scene where Batman, I think it was Batman, is describing how Cassandra is gentle in these fights. That scene was awesome. You guys remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, he's talking about how Cassandra has all of this knowledge. She can see them coming. She has all of this strength. She's made for this, like, from birth. And even with all of that, she could kill them all in, like, one punch. But instead, she's not toying with them. She's, like, pitying everyone she fights and is just gentle on them. And that's, like, if you understand how fighting works and you can see that in her, why are you worried about her killing someone? Like, she could have done it 10 ways to Sunday at any second. And just because you saw a tape, all of a sudden it changes. And now you're worried about it constantly.
Well, then, too, the dumb thing is the redeeming action that she takes is that she takes a bunch of bullets for the bad guy, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Batman's like, okay, now you're okay in my book.
Like, she would have done that anyway. I don't know.
I didn't like this characterization of Batman. I mean, I think we all made that clear. It just wasn't.
I mean, there's really one character in this comic, and everybody else is built to support her.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception, the singular exception of maybe David Kane, who seems like he's an established character whose story came before what we're reading.
Well, so, like, So Batgirl, this Batgirl,
yes.
Cassandra Cain, was introduced in No Man's Land.
Mm-hmm.
And in No Man's Land, I think, if I remember correctly, so David Cain is sent in to, like, assassinate Commissioner Gordon, and I think Cassandra saves him. And then that's how she gets in with...
with the Bat Family.
With the Bat Family. And Oracle, and so she, like, works with Oracle. Oracle and Batman, like, allow her to be, whatchamacallit, to be Batgirl during No Man's Land. And then she continues afterwards, so.
It's so funny. After reading Year One and Oracle's, like, pissed off monologues of, who gave you the authority to hand out badges for being a vigilante? And then she turns around and does it to Cassandra. Like, we're going to let you be Batgirl. No, I think Cassandra's going to let you all live, is what's going to happen. That's what it sounds more like. So what did you guys think of this different take on Batgirl? How does it feel different? How does it evolve the mythos of Batman to have Cassandra versus Barbara?
Well, so, I think the big difference is that... you know, Barbara wanted to help. She wanted to be a masked vigilante to do good. Mm. And Cassandra is doing it to atone for her past actions.
Yeah, she's doing it out of guilt. I think we had the discussion last week about Barbara and the reason. And I really like that nomenclature from Year One, you know, the reason for being a bat person. And I feel like Cassandra's reason is deep-seated in her, much more probably than Barbara was, during Year One anyway. And, like, just being so young, it's traumatic. What happened to her is deep-seated trauma that won't go away no matter how much she does this, which is something Batman could certainly identify with. I have to say also, it seems like a lot of Cassandra is very opposite to Batgirl in a lot of ways. Batgirl didn't start out a fighter. She just kind of trained a little bit, but clearly is not as good as everyone else in the Bat family, Whereas if you contrast that with Cassandra, who is clearly better than everyone.
Well, Barbara had basic. I mean, she was a black belt in Aikido, right?
Yeah, she had definitely had fighting ability.
But not at the same level as... No. I mean, Cassandra's trained from birth to be an assassin. So.
Yeah. And a hardcore assassin, too.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I really love this character design for Cassandra. Because aside from the idea of her being interesting... The costume design is balls out terrifying. Like the stitched up mouth and the blacked out eyes. Just like, it makes it really hard to read her face during like a fight scene or anytime she has the mask on. They tried really hard, but then you gotta elongate features comically in order to get an effect from it. But it would definitely work. If I suspended disbelief and put myself in that world as a criminal and saw Cassandra coming at me, I'd be way more fucking terrified than seeing any other member of the Bat family.
Yeah. Her costume is scary. It almost looks like it would have been worn by someone who, like, spends their time in Arkham Asylum.
Yeah. The sewn-up mouth. Oh, man. And even the blacked-out Bat symbol was cool, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like her costume. So, in Batman Inc., which came out right before and then continued during New 52, she goes by the character Black, by the name Black Bat. And, she's the Batman of Hong Kong.
Oh.
Because you know how, like, in Batman Inc., there's, like, a Batman in different places around the world.
Yeah, they're all
over
the Batman global.
She's the Batman of Hong Kong. And she has the same costume except for the cowl, cape and cowl. So she doesn't have a cowl at all. She has a mask and a different cape, but the like jumpsuit is the same one with the same blacked out bat symbol and stuff.
Sick.
And so I thought I liked that costume design too. I mean, like my description doesn't do it justice. You should like check it out if you get a chance. Just look at Black Bat. But yeah.
So this question is actually a little bit off course, but is she the one in Batman Incorporated, like, Batman goes to Hong Kong and then some woman gets trapped in a tank with, like, all these tentacles and has, like, the weird tentacle scene in the New 52? Or is that someone else?
I think that's somebody else. I think that was actually... Was that Hong Kong or Japan? I don't know. I don't
remember. It might have been Japan.
Because there's a Mr. Unknown is the Batman of Japan, and I
yes,
remember that
what
being
it was.
The tentacle thing in that comic. Okay.
Yeah. That's what. Yeah.
I just needed to like confirm or deny whether Cassandra was also Tentacle Girl.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure not. Wasn't her.
Okay. So I have a semi-serious business question here.
Okay.
And this kind of started with characters like Daredevil, but there's a certain amount of kickback against characters who are, like, so disabled that they're better than the abled kind of a thing. And the one who breaks that mold, of course, is Oracle, who is straight up actually disabled and learns to adapt who she is to strengthen the abilities that she still has. Contrastingly to, like, Daredevil and Cassandra, who are missing an ability that most people have, and that somehow magically superpowers them almost into being better than everybody else. And in Cassandra's case, it's the not having a language center. Like, the guy who re-scrambles her brain or whatever says, like, straight up, you don't have a language center. It doesn't exist in your brain structure. Which actually would make decently sound neurological... science, you have a language center. It doesn't go away. It just shrinks or grows depending on how much you use it. So if she never learned language, if she was starved of language, her like Broca's and Wernicke's area would shrink and get taken over by the motor cortex, which is actually nearby. The idea of body language is founded by the fact that like on either side of your head, you have a Broca's area and a Wernicke's area. And then going around the top of your head, kind of bridging the two, is your motor cortex. So all of your body movements. So that's how we get the idea of body language, because the two parts of your brain are so close together, your body can make those connections very easily. So the idea behind Cassandra Cain being the badass she isn't totally outrageously stupid. of course, hopefully nobody would ever have to actually go through this, so you wouldn't know. But what do you guys think of the whole, like, so disabled that they're better than the abled kind of a trope, I want to say? I don't know if trope's the right word there. It's tough, because this is such a cool character.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of the kickback I've seen against it is within the disabled community, and like, I can see where they're coming from, but as like a fully abled person, it's like hard to comment. Never like really thought about it, I guess. I just always took it as like, this is not the real world. This is comics world where strange things happen without reason. So it always, it never appeared to me as something to like consider in reality, the same way I don't really think about how like impossible like Power Girl's chest is, things like that, right? It's just so far separate. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't, I get the criticism. The criticism is usually along the lines of like, disability is not something you should glorify. And I get that, but at the same time, I don't know. I think you're right. We don't, none of us have a place to comment here. None of us are disabled. I think the closest any of us can come is that, I am very obese. Actually, I'm not as big as I used to be, but I'm familiar with the idea of obesity as a disability, and like, I guess it's kind of funny, because when you're fat, the superhero that's nearest to you is the Blob, who's not a hero.
Well, see, you have, in the time I've known you, Andy, you have lost a lot of weight, so well done. Yeah. But there is a fat superhero from the Avengers Initiative comic that spun out of Civil War called Butterball.
Oh.
And he's kind of, it's actually kind of a sad character, because his ability is that his power is that his body can't be changed. So like, he can't be injured. Period. He's like completely invulnerable. But he also can't like no matter how much he exercises and stuff, he can't lose any weight. Gain muscle or anything like that. He's just invulnerable, completely invulnerable. And so his story is really kind of sad in the comics, because he doesn't make the cut to be part of the Avengers Initiative. Because he has no, he can't be in the comics or anything. He can't be in combat because he can't learn, like he just can't improve his physical abilities. But what's kind of great is at the end in his little storyline is that his family, cause he went off to this camp, the Avengers training camp, and then got sent back. Some of the instructors like Taskmaster and some of the other people who were instructors of the Avengers Initiative at the time let him like take a picture where he like beat them up and to show his family. And so his family ends up being proud of him, even though he's not an Avenger. Oh, so it kind really of is like sick. A bittersweet thing. And then later during, I think it was the Dark Reign where Norman Osborn was in charge of the world. They use him as a, basically as a distraction. So they send him out first, like to fight these bad guys, and the bad guys all like attack him. But fortunately he can't be hurt, and it allows the other heroes to like come in and save, you know, not save the day, but I mean, he helps in his own special way.
Yeah. And I guess there's also, was it Bouncing Boy from the Legion? He's pretty big.
Yeah, but he's not,
I think he balloons up to it.
He's not immobile.
No.
You know, the opposite, in fact.
That's true. Just bounce along. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough because you want to have a hero that can speak to, that you can speak to people in a way that not every other hero can. Like, Cassandra Cain could be a great character for a kid with a speech impediment. You know? Really, really could be. But it kind of, it's very, very dependent on how they're written. Cause it could be, why aren't you a superhero then? Or why don't you have some special power? Or it could be like an oracle, like, yes, Barbara can no longer walk again. Does that mean that her career is over? She's not a superhero? No. Like, you could say that after becoming Oracle, she becomes a more important contribution to the heroes of the DC universe. Like, she, it kind of helps her grow into being something bigger and better in a way that is totally believable and real. And it's tough to toe that line between the two and to get one and not the other. Anyway, I felt like that was something we should bring up because it is a common criticism with Cassandra and with characters like Cassandra and Daredevil and stuff like that. But
yeah, I mean, it's just, especially the presentation here, Cassandra seems incredibly unrealistic. And I think part of what's so nice about Barbara Gordon is we clearly see her, like, on both sides of the fence. Like, she struggles with her disability, but at the same time, she finds a way to build a meaningful life for herself around it.
Mm-hmm.
With Cassandra, her disability never in these six issues comes as a disability. In fact, when she is no longer disabled, like speech disabled, she loses her super
That's true.
Powers. And, like, I mean, she was a little sad, it seemed, but we never saw it be an emotional or psychological issue for her, really. And she was, like, happy. We get that moment of, like, I thought I'd have to spend my whole life like this. But it feels very, like, kind of glossed over.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say, like, you're going to have enough time to fully develop, like, the emotional weight of not understanding human speech in six issues. right? Like, you can't. That's a very complex topic.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't feel as important here because we see someone like Barbara experience, like, ability, disability, and then, like, coping through that. And Cassandra's just like, oh, that's neat. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, you guys want to rate this?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to go first. It sounds like you guys are in a little bit of a lag, so I'll go first. I don't know. I'm torn because I really did not like the art in this. I, like, vehemently do not like this art style, and aside from not liking the style, I don't think I like the pacing and a lot of the other work done here in terms of the art. And tons of these characters are just cardboard and stock, and their only purpose is to support Cassandra. But, man, Cassandra is such a good character. She's so interesting, and I want to read so much about her, and I feel like she's a great addition to the Bat family in all kinds of different ways. And I know that Amazing Comic Relief has to be coming with her inability to talk, or her strong but silent type kind of a thing. So I'm really I'm torn. So much of me hated this comic and so much of me loved it. And I think when I'm that torn, I just have to give it a 2.5. If you like Cassandra, you're going to like this a lot more. And if you are kind of iffy on Cassandra, you're not really going to like this. But, I like Cassandra. So I'm going to read a little bit more, see where it goes. But, I'm glad I read Cassandra because she's one of those people that you read about all the time in forums and stuff. And you know she's a controversial part of the Bat family, but I like her. And I wish I could see more of her in a lot of different other things. But for this comic, a 2.5. How about you, David?
You know, I'm going to agree with you and also give it a 2.5 because just like you, I don't like this art style.
It's so 90s.
Well, it's not even, I don't like the exaggerated facial features that we see in some of the thugs. And, it's not my choice when I read comics like this would, you know, just, I just don't like this style of art. And I'm not saying that it's bad because I don't have the skills to draw like this.
Yeah.
It's still skillfully done, but I certainly couldn't, you know, I don't like it. So I don't know what else to say. But like you, I really enjoy Cassandra Cain. I like David Kane too as a character. One thing we don't get in this is Cassandra's mother, but she is revealed eventually in comics, and she is one of my favorite DC characters. I won't spoil it for you in case you
wait. So. You can tell me. I'll cut it out, or I'll bleep over this. Who is it?
It's.
Oh, that's so sick! I do love her. Okay, I'm gonna bleep over that. We'll okay. Keep my reaction. Oh, it's so awesome.
I will say that if you like Cassandra Cain or are curious about Cassandra Cain, it's definitely worth the read because she is done really well in this comic. Even if the art is not my favorite art mm-hmm. style. So yeah, 2.5.
All right. Jen?
I'm also going to go with a 2.5. Like you guys, the art was not my favorite. And I think that it's well done in its own right. Just not for me. So, I don't... I'm not trying to criticize the artist or anything. It's just not to my personal taste. I felt that the pacing of the panels in the first three issues was a little tough to decipher at times. But, once it started kind of getting on a roll, there were some really nice, panel-to-panel transitions there. So that was cool. I think for me the off-putting thing too was the very end. Batman just seemed so out of character when he was like, well, good, you got shot for the right reasons. And it not only did it feel weird, it was very anticlimactic. Like, this shouldn't have been where the trade ended. So I thought that they could have at least put in another issue or two to resolve some of that standoff. Did the guy get out safely? Did they get shot? What happened? It's a mystery. And it didn't even feel like a cliffhanger mystery. It was just anticlimactic. So 2.5.
Okay. I'm glad we all agree. All right. You guys ready for fight night?
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
Never. So this okay. week, every week is brought to you by Patreon. Become a Patreon patron today. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics and support the show. If you want to know about all the benefits and cool things you can do and get when you become a patron, go listen to any other episode because I just tripped all over my words and I don't want to try tripping over more. But become a patron today. patreon.com/welcometocomics. This week for Fight Night, our topic of the day is best superhero hideout. We picked this one because we couldn't think of anything else, and I figured Batman, Batcave, fuck it, works for me. So best superhero hideout. The Batcave is a wonderful example.
Fight Night. Round one.
All right, so I think the characters from comics who have the best hideout is the Legion of Doom. You might be familiar with them from Super Friends or Justice League Unlimited. And not only does their... I think it's called the Hall of Doom. It's located in a place called Slaughter Swamp. It's like a cool skull-looking thing. But best of all, it can travel in space. Because there's that part, the last two-part episode from Justice League Unlimited... They fly into space to find Brainiac and, they,
oh, yeah.
And they have that cool conference room where they all sit in a U and Lex Luthor goes on the, behind the, what's that thing called? Podium. It's just great. I mean, everybody wishes they had a, Hall of Doom. Anyways, yeah, that's it.
All right.
Round two.
I'm going to say Mogo because Mogo is his own hideout. He has hidden many Green Lanterns on himself before.
Yeah?
He has, I think, hidden behind, it was either a black hole or space anomaly or something. So he himself can hide his hideout. You could fit as many giant pennies as you like on Mogo. Those are my top three reasons. Essay complete.
Round three.
You know, there are tons of good ones for this, and I had a couple others. The Big W, Guy Gardner's restaurant/bar on Oa, was going to be my go-to. David mentioned the Bardas, the Big Bardas got free home. That's another great one. I just thought of Castle Doom in Latveria would be sick. But what I'm going to settle on is The Bunker. The Bunker was the hideout of Justice League Detroit. It's a leftover factory/ design center that Steel had made, and when Steel's grandson becomes a member of Justice League Detroit, he gives the bunker to the team. And, you know, I don't really know much about the bunker, other than that it was built in the 70s, and its longest occupant was Vibe. So you know that that thing is tricked out with the best fucking stereos in all of the DC universe. There's some retro tube shit in there. The speakers are prime. The whole thing's got subwoofers all throughout. There's probably a nice projector setup in there. Like, you could survive a whole lot of shit in that. Plus, it's called the bunker. It's like, it's probably damn near impenetrable. But really, the reason you go there is because the stereo, the 70s, Justice League Detroit. The bunker. All right, let's vote. David?
Oh, man. I don't know. I really want to... I don't know. This is tough. Shit. Mogo's pretty cool. Mogo's cooler than the bunker, Andy. Man, but you know that in addition to that sweet sound system, there's got to be, like, some cardboard on the floor for breakdancing.
Yeah. There's probably one of those rotating heart-shaped beds.
But you could have all those things on Mogo. And Mogo could just make them for you with his Green Lantern ring. So I gotta give it to Mogo.
Woo!
I'm sorry, Andy.
That's Vibe okay.
is cool, but he's not as cool as Mogo.
Shit happens. Jen?
I'm gonna have to go with Andy.
Yeah.
You just painted such a good mental picture there. I can see it in my mind's eye.
Leopard print.
Yes. And, like, velveteen sofas.
Yes. Oh, the bunker.
Disco ball. I see it.
Yeah. And I imagine the bunker would be a great, like, cross-universe hangout, too. Because if the Marvel Universe comes over, you can just have Dazzler swing by, have a good old time. Kitty Pryde would be cool there. She was a disco-swinging girl back when. Yeah. So let's see. I gotta choose between Mogo and the thing the Legion of Doom lives in.
It's called the Hall of Doom.
The Hall of Doom. Oh, Hall of Doom or Mogo. See, I think Mogo is the cooler option, but I feel like Mogo would be winning on a technicality. Because Mogo is his own hideout. But... I think I'm going to go with the Hall of Doom.
Yes.
Because... Well, no, because you said it can go into space, but Mogo lives in space.
But see, Mogo can't come down to Earth.
Yeah, Mogo doesn't.
Would kill us all.
Mogo doesn't socialize. Yeah, I'm gonna go with the Hall of Doom because.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's an actual hideout. I feel like if there was a panel where like Mogo had ever drawn, like had used his Green Lantern powers to make a house around himself, but I don't think he's ever done that. He's been a hideout for other people.
I will say, I fully admit that using Mogo on this one is like getting the genie lamp and being like, I wish for more wishes.
Yeah, I think, yes, that's a great articulation of why I feel like that's a little bunk. Because that's, and honestly, like, your arguments for Mogo were just like mine were going to be for the Big W, for Guy Gardner's bar. Like, it's filled with Green Lanterns. Literally anything you want is there. It's the Deus Ex Machina answer. So I'm gonna go with the Hall of Doom. So, since everybody got a vote, that means everybody gets a point.
We're all winners.
Yay, so special.
So I haven't given a recap in a while, but next week is our last week of doing Fight Night for this round. David has 3 points, Jen has 3 points, and I have 2.5. I got that half a pity point. But that means that next week We've been doing this then for, what is that, 8 weeks now, and we are really, really close still. Next week, we're going to read Batgirl Rising by Brian Q. Miller, and that's the one with Stephanie Brown, which I'm really excited about. I love Stephanie Brown. So that's going to be our last Fight Night. Spoiler, goddamn it, David. That's going to be our last Fight Night, and whoever wins next week wins this motherfucker.
You going to mail a surprise?
No.
All right.
So I asked. Sorry. I'll think about it for the end of the year. Like who won the most rounds of things for the year. It'll probably be shitty though because I'm not in the running. So
if it was good, it would be good if you were buying something for yourself.
Yes.
I'm so Is it gonna be a Power Girl statue?
Oh, I had to cancel it and it hurt so bad.
You did the right thing.
I know. I hate having kids. She's not even out yet.
I feel no pity for you whatsoever.
No, she would have been a bad idea anyway. I looked at the statue some more and I realized that while it would be awesome to have a Power Girl statue, the pose is just not good. She's just like standing there. And like, yeah, Kara, you're great to look at and all, but you know, do something. Like that's why I like the Liara one I got, because she's in like this badass pose. But no, PG's just like standing around. Hey, I'm Power Girl. Just like that. Typical Power Girl. So next week, yeah, Batgirl Rising by Brian Q. Miller with Stephanie Brown. That's then. For now, though, good night, everybody.
Good night.